I left my beer upstairs. Welcome to Beerfield. I'm your host, Chris Hopper, at Beerfield Hop. As always, joined by Dan Thury, at Beerfield Thury. Talk to the people for a second while I go undo my misdeeds.
Yes, you go and go correct everything that you did wrong. We are the Beerfield Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your re-intern filling co-host, Dan Thury at Thury, or Beerfield Thury. Hop his beer. He's at Beerfield Hop, at Ryan Minor underscore FFB, Daddy Network FF Face Off, guys over there. I'm almost Mr. Reliable. I was not here this past week, as we couldn't line things up. So perfect timing. He's back.
What'd you tell him?
All the socials.
All the socials. Perfect. Great.
Yeah. I actually got that right.
And that Ryan's not here. Well, I'll never know if you didn't. And that Ryan's not here because he's sucking at bowling right now.
Because he's being horrible at bowling.
Right.
He's forgetting how to close frames. It's fine.
That's fine.
Just keep leaving your frames open. It's
only
okay.
Need one ball.
Yeah, you only need one ball.
We've got dynasty stock check-ins for you. So we're gonna talk Dalvin Cook first, guys. Obviously, that news breaking earlier today, kind of anticipated, but we'll have a conversation about that. Landing spots, Vikings impacts, etc., etc. From there, we'll talk dynasty stock up, stock down. We're going to drink some beer. Quick housekeeping item, real quick. If you are in the St. Louis area this weekend, and hopefully already have tickets because it's sold out, Dan and I will, as of today, both be at Bourbon and Brews.
Yep, I will.
On Sunday or
I'm
Saturday?
I'm still waiting to get my email with the information about where to go, but I'm pretty sure Homeboy will send that, or I can figure it out too.
So that I do know.
Okay.
So we can talk off air. I do know to tell you where we're going and where the pavilions are and everything like that. I've got the maps and all that fun stuff. So
yeah,
I do have that covered. So yeah, I'll be there. I'm actually on the event organizer side. Dan's pouring beer. I'm on the event organizer side for that one. So I'll be helping run the technology at check-in and then manage crowd. And then I'll be, I think, working a merch table later in the day. Because that's what you do, is you make me talk to people. Also, shout out to Austin, Texas, for being an incredible host city the last couple of days for a work conference. 36 is a fun time. My liver is definitely paying for it. We'll segue that into beer because I'm going light tonight.
So am I.
Nice.
What's fueling beer fueled?
And I actually might have had this on before or even 2 weeks ago. I really don't know, but I'll do a post facto review of what I was drinking in Austin the whole time, because I found one beer there and just kind of stuck to it. So anyway, yeah. I'm drinking Southern Crisp. This is their Pilsner style lager. I think I did have this before.
You had a Southern Grist on. I don't know if it was that one. I'm actually shocked because the only Southern Grist I ever see is their heavily and overly adjunct stuff. So it's nice to hear Southern Grist actually makes real beer.
It might have been with Ryan too. I can't remember if I did, because I remember we had a conversation about what makes something warty, but I can't remember if that was in text or on the show or non-alcohol.
You had an NA Oktoberfest.
Okay, so I haven't put it on the show, so there's a good chance that I actually had the beer I'm drinking this week also on last week, and I just don't remember it. So
That's incredible. Shows the amount of commitment that we put towards.
Whatever, I'll cover it so you get something new as well.
I wasn't here last week, so
that's true. So you'll get to hear it, and then if I've already done this beer, which I think I probably did, I'll do a review of Austin Beer Works Pearl Snap, because that's what I was drinking all week. So the taste of that's ingrained in my mind pretty good. What do you got?
I'm drinking Nude Whistles Brewski.
Nice.
So Nude Whistles Brewski actually won gold at the World Beer Cup here about a month ago. I ran into their downstate rep at Benny's a couple weeks ago, talked with him for a bit, and he had samples, and I mentioned wanting to try this because it's cool to get to try gold medal winning beer regardless of style, and B, it's cool to be able to drink that with it being represented from the state of Illinois. So again, Noon Whistle's out of Chicago.
They are
very heavily popular in this area.
We get them down here too. So
yeah, they are available all across the state. He was making his first trips down to your area, I think, this summer. I don't know if he's getting down to Collinsville, but I know he's going to Edwardsville. They're finally breaching the Southeast Metro side, the Illinois Riverside, which is a very difficult place to sell when you're not a St. Louis local brewery.
Same. They have
they treat St. Louis real.
You're like talking about coming down here to do pours and stuff and like sampling
just to work and just go like meet. Yeah, basically.
Gotcha. You know, I know Randall's has them.
Sell you. Well, yeah, Randall's and Total Wine. Those places will all have it. Like any, you know, bigger.
Fairview Total Wine never has shit. I hate them.
No, we don't. I don't need to lose my job over my opinion of Total Wine. So, because you know they all listen to.
Great, let's move on. They all listen to us. every Total Wine manager ever is going to go turn Dan in.
And all of our distillers like,
do you want to give your opinion? Do you want to give your opinion on iced glasses tonight, or you're not doing that one either?
No. But don't serve anything that's not a light beer in
out
a
of
frosted
ice glass.
Yes. It was it definitely wasn't fully frosted. It was super fucking cold. You can totally tell that the flavor profiles have changed because of it. I've drank these beers enough to know.
Mm-hmm.
And it for those of you who may not know why this is the case, it the real simplistic version is it mutes a lot of the flavors that you would get. It kind of masks it or takes it away. I don't know if it takes it away more so, but it really masks it. And you're drinking, you effectively potentially having a different experience with the beer than you would have if it was served in a normal glass.
You just gave me an episode idea for one of the weeks we don't have anything planned.
We get to Super Beer Nerd too. We're actually hosting Benny's at the brewery, and we're being a part of their training program
to learn
how to taste off tasting beers.
Oh, sweet.
Because you can buy kits. I didn't know this.
Yeah, I did.
You can buy kits. I'm like, this is fucking to learn.
This is exactly how I did my beer dredge training. You buy kits, and then you basically, for you guys, you would take your normal pills, probably. We did it with Zwickle because we were at Urban Chestnut.
Yep.
But you buy the kits, and you basically just spike a beer with it, and you can get the off flavor. So you're going to learn to taste DMS and diastole and all that fun stuff. So, which DMS, cooked corn, diastole is buttered popcorn or a real like slick mouthfeel that everybody's different levels of sensitive of. Acetaldehyde, you're going to get all the fun stuff.
Yeah, I am super. I knew the buttery one because that's.
Mm-hmm. You've heard me talk about it a lot.
Well,
too.
No. Well, when the pina colada sour came out for distill, I there was legitimate concerns that it was spoiled.
Yeah.
Because it had a strong butter taste. It was not. This is well before I started working for them. I think I pissed off the rep at the time because I kept getting people like, this tastes off. It's like, this is too coconut, too much butter.
There's a test that you can do if you're ever doubting it and whether it's diastole or a recipe difference. If you want to do this at home, feel free. But if you get like butterscotch or movie theater butter or a slickness on your tongue, you can actually heat the beer up. Don't microwave it. Do it medium heat on the stove because you don't want to destroy compounds. But you actually heat the beer up to, I think, 170 degrees. Chris Ron taught me this, owner of Stubborn German. And then kind of let it free cool down to a temperature where you can drink it. And you will, if the diastole impression becomes worse, then it's diastole. If it's about the same, then it's a recipe problem because some grains can give that impression and adjuncts. So there you go. Fun fact.
FFs.
We are going to, so we have some here at the beginning of July, like 4 weeks where there's nothing planned after we get through our dynasty stuff. So we're going to do a beer Mythbusters. We're going to bust some beer myths.
Love it.
So we'll see if we can get somebody on to, but we're going to talk myths about pouring, myths about styles, because I think we can definitely make a full episode out of that between you and I.
Yeah.
And Ryan can learn stuff. All right. Let's move on.
News.
The more I think about it, the more I definitely had this on last week, but that's okay. All right, Dalvin Cook was released. That's the biggest news. Yeah, that's the biggest news. That's been anticipated for a while. Cost-saving measure from the Vikings, yep. First and foremost. Dalvin Cook obviously still a viable back in this league, capable of bell cow work and missing about 2 to 3 games a season, but in any event. So this becomes a, you know, there's a viable running back on the market. Let's first talk, though, what we do know, and that's with Minnesota. They've already kind of endorsed Alex Mattison. They're not going to go invest that into the running back. So what this does is it moves everyone up their depth chart. They have Dwayne McBride, something called Ty Chandler. Alex Mattison slides in as a starter. And then a guy I really like, Kenny Wonwu, who's been doing punt return duties for them, who's a super explosive athlete, potentially gets into some change of pace roles.
I've been thinking about this all day. So quick clarification, even though I don't think it'll matter, they're going to continue to try to trade them. The question that this, when we brought this up, is why don't they just trade him? Well, his contract.
Yeah.
His contract was pretty hefty. Minnesota is now a top 10 team in salary cap. This is going to give them the flexibility to make adjustments when players get cut. All their running backs in the market. There's also a wide receiver that was just recently let go that could really help really propel this offense forward. It's obviously a huge win for Madison people, for guys, not just liking Madison, but people that have him on their dynasty roster. I have preemptively pulled up his profile on DLF to get some recent trades. And as obvious as I knew it would be, is that he's been traded multiple times since the first report came out not too long ago for first round picks. Multiple trades involving 24 firsts have been involved for Madison straight up or paired with very, very low upside guys. Gus Edwards, Melvin Gordon, all those guys are being involved in these trades, but effectively he's being traded for a 24 first. It's well documented. I'm not the biggest Madison fan. His upside's obviously pretty big with this move. This is a very high scoring offense. They're going to be involved in shootouts in an improved NFC North division. This should be more likely that's going to happen. Problem is, he hasn't been an actual bell cow since college. Second problem is he actually hasn't been a starter for back-to-back games. What we do know is he's been very efficient when he's been in. He's been very great for fantasy
when he's been
a starter, and that's great. He's going to have a full-time workload. It's going to be for multiple games, so now we get to see if his body can hold up to that. Guys like Ty Chandler and Nwanu are speedsters, guys that can get up there. McBride, have to do a little more research on, and maybe you'll know, but this is a team that's, and they could still bring in a Zeke or Fournette. I don't think they will. I don't see why they would. It'd be a bad move, but what we do know is that Madison has now reached pretty high valued heights. If you can trade him away for a first, do it. Because this isn't just my hate of him. This isn't just me not liking him.
No, it's a sell high because he's not a long term solution. He's
no,
been barely for a year. Base. It's like better Samaje Perine, basically.
P. Ryan catches passes in the NFL. We've known that.
Well,
that, and that's been his role, and he's got the size to be Bell, and he's handled multiple games in a row's worth of work. So
it's, I guess,
Madison, we assume would, but
I guess what I mean by that is volume, regardless of how that volume happens, plus efficiency is what I mean by better, just kind of in different ways. So, and it's really just a comparison to say nobody thinks Samaje Perine's a future in Denver either, but he might be a good 1 year plug in.
Yeah. And Madison's on a 2 year deal. He got re-signed, you know, very cheap contract. If he shows up enough this year, he can definitely be valued. There's he's worth more than Perine because of that. There is, unless Minnesota hits a home run with one of these day three picks they've spent the last couple of years or brings in a veteran, Madison's got some security in that way. We don't know what he's going to look like on a team that had a really bad running game last year with Cook, who had one of his worst efficiency seasons of his career. We'll see how his efficiency numbers can hold up, because there's nothing that pet peeves me more than people extrapolating a 5-game sample into a full season's worth of stats and saying, well, this is what he could have been in 5 games. He did this. It's like,
we did that.
What the fuck am I going to do with that? Like, well, great, man. He played 5 games. Like, awesome. I'm really happy for him. Did it have him win games? Probably not.
Yeah. So Dwayne McBride, I actually was high on. The problem is it doesn't give him any level of variance from what Madison is,
yeah,
necessarily, because McBride wasn't a pass catcher either. He's 5'10", 215, 30.8 BMI. He had a college denominator of 40+. The blurb I wrote on him is that he's going to be a landing spot matters guy, and this absolutely helps.
Yeah.
The ability to make chunk plays happen is absolutely there. The burst is above average, and he runs with plenty of open field strength. Lack of receiving ability and ability to create at the line prevents him from being elite or discussed with the upper level backs in this class, but he slides in nicely as a guy that creates some intrigue based on landing spot. I ultimately see him starting off in a timeshare or as a pure backup. I like that he was a one-cut runner with vision that could stop on a dime, plus acceleration with okay top-end speed, decently powerful, especially in the open field. Above average top end speed. He has the ability to do chunk plays. It's just he lacked agility, shiftiness, doesn't showcase anything in the receiving game. So it's a lot like what you kind of have in Madison, which is why Wanwu becomes interesting as a more dynamic type of smaller, more explosive back. Yeah. McBride, I'd see more as a Madison handcuff or a short yardage change of pace, I think, is where he falls for me. It's good for him, nonetheless. Like, we're talking dynasty stock up, stock down. Like, this is stock up for Madison. This is also stock up for McBride, because he's going to fall into a role where Minnesota has had people be successful. So,
and they're going to be involved in shootouts. This is going to be one of the league's worst. It's going to be one of the league's worst defense when it comes to points, potentially points allowed and yardage allowed. You know, Brian Flores is one of the more aggressive defensive coordinators, which is going to mirror what we saw last year with the team trying to generate sacks and turnovers because they can't fucking stop anybody. So they have to try to stop teams that way. So it'll be very interesting to keep watch of who's taking third down work and, you know, during training camp and preseason, because that's going to be a valued role in this offense. And if Madison can secure it and maintain even a 55, 60% opportunity share, that is a recipe for an RB1 with its offense if he can remain healthy and all this. It's just people, I think, are paying for that or paying close to that right now when we're 3 months away and a lot can still change. Like, they can bring Fournette in the next day and people be like, oh, well, fuck, that's it. Like, and the people that paid a first round pick for him are potentially SOL.
Yeah. All right, shifting gears, let's talk about possible landing spots for Dalvin Cook. Miami is obviously the hot one. Explosive offense, creates a lot of space. Dalvin Cook traditionally works well in space. He's good in the receiving game. And the Dolphins just kind of brought back their guys from last year outside of A-Chain, who's a smaller back, you know, kind of like what we just talked about with Wanwu, where, you know, you're going to use him in space in the receiving game in a lot of different creative ways, not necessarily as a true runner. So the Dolphins are the most popular landing spot. What? And he's been tied to them through trades too for a bit. So thoughts on that?
I mean, Miami would be a fantastic spot for all the points you mentioned, explosive offense, wide open running lanes. They run a very similar, I mean, him in that zone running scheme with one cut, accelerate to his high end speed. He's not the same. He doesn't have the same burst as he used to through multiple knee injuries, but he can still get there relatively quickly. We saw that last year in games against Miami, against the same team, mm-hmm. and against Buffalo. We know that he can get there, and then against the Colts. Obviously, he's a well-versed pass catcher. He can fulfill that role if they ask him to use it. The thing is, I don't know if we're going to find out for a while. There is no real incentive for Cook to pick a team quickly, right? It's not a wide receiver like Hopkins wanting to, you know, pick out a team because he wants to get in, work with the quarterback, build the chemistry, especially, you know, in teams that utilize a lot of timing routes. All Cook has to do is just show up last second, be worked into the offense, maybe have one or two hiccups, and then be fine because he has great instincts. Like, that's just how good he is. So we may not know for a while. This could be like what, you know, what Fournette did back in 2020 with the Bucs and just be a last second addition. Mm-hmm. He can wait. He can find the right fit. And all we know is that he wouldn't take a pay cut. We don't know what he is truly looking for. We just know what would be a fun spot for him.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at other fun spots, it's easy to wish cast something like the Chiefs. They don't really have cap space. Miami does. You know, it's not like him taking a pay cut was, you know, or for him to take a pay cut, it was a huge pay cut, right? His base is only $2 million, $3 million signing bonus, but his cap number was only $2 million. So, I mean, the Chiefs could, in theory, create space. That, I think, would be the other, like, really interesting landing spot. Some less interesting things. You could see Cleveland maybe jumping in as a Kareem Hunt replacement. You could see...
I mean, there's so many spots. You
yeah,
know,
there's a lot
Dallas
of spots
to be paired with Howard.
Yeah, Dallas, Buffalo with his brother. Mike. You can see New Orleans in the way that that's kind of gone. The Rams, if they wanted to try to make cap space, could certainly make a play for that. So it's going to be interesting to watch. A lot of speculations, a lot of things to wish cast, a lot of fun people could be doing. Now, I saw a post where... or something somewhere where people are already seeing Dalvin Cook get cut. Don't do that. He will be starting somewhere this year.
Yeah, and you're not and trying to move him in dynasty is going to be rough.
Until he signs. You don't move him when he's cut. You move him when he signs.
I mean, you can
signs,
try to trade for him now if you want. If you can try to pry him away,
that's one thing. But if you're the Cook manager, you don't trade him now. You wait until he signs and for that hype to go off the rails, because the odds of him landing some place where that hype is going to go through the roof, especially with the scarcity of running backs, a lot better than it hurting his value.
So just some recent trade. It's going to be tough to find trades for him right now, just based off what I'm seeing from DLLF. I have nothing from today, which is shouldn't be shocking. Over the last couple of days, since the rumors have started to come out, only one that it's kind of, there's been two that have kind of stuck out in terms of trying to value Cook. One of them was Cook with a package. It was Cook by himself in a package with a 24 first that included rookie wide receiver Michael Wilson, and that's probably it. So you get Cook, you know, for a first and a bunch of whatevers, and then Cook was involved with Christian Watson in a 24 third to move up and get Travis Etienne. So value and Cook's going to be all over the place. It's going to be very, very league by league, obviously, which makes sense. But as Hopper and I just alluded to, if you have Cook, you're holding. You are absolutely holding. If you are desperate to move him, it will not be in a one for one deal or a one for two. You want to involve. If you have to move Cook, he needs to be involved in a package deal with other pieces, where you can kind of mass the value of where it could be, or if someone's still intrigued, you could, like, it's moving. If you're trying to move into something that maybe it's a little more safe, but trying to trade them one for one now would be a very, very poor chase, because you're probably not going to get value.
No, you should not do a one to one trade.
And plus, this isn't the draft class to do it, because there's no way you're going to get a high enough first round pick this year to get either Bijan or Gibbs. So you're just, what are you moving him for then at that case?
Yeah. Hey, Young finally bumped up over Andy Dalton for first team reps.
Shocking.
Because that was ever not going to happen.
Oh, man. Andy Dalton just bringing in first round quarterbacks ahead of him now.
Titans are hosting DeAndre Hopkins for a visit. That would be terrible.
I saw it somewhere. So I thought I saw someone say that it feels very just Hopkins trying to re-get his name back out there. It's been relatively quiet. Both the Chiefs and Bills, the Chiefs especially, that they have the lowest amount of cap right now. I can't feasibly see without the Chiefs making more moves how they're going to create. I mean, I'm sure they can figure it out. Obviously, those guys, salary cap's a myth. But in terms of looking at where teams are at, the Chiefs in Buffalo, which has been the dream spot for most people for Hopkins to land, it's pretty tough right now. You got to look at where teams are at now and what teams are making moves now. Because Hopkins does need, right? The opposite of Cook, you want to get Hopkins into a team as quickly as possible, because he's going to start wherever he goes. And you want him to get out there and working with the starting quarterback and all that good stuff. So I'm with you, though. I pray to God it's not Tennessee. That makes absolutely no fucking sense to anybody. The Titans and for him. Like, why? What's the point?
Many things that don't make sense. Jacoby Brissett and Sam Howell are competing for the week one starting job. Why?
Okay. How quickly that has changed in 2 months.
Why in the world? I don't understand this.
It's why
it's posturing. I know it's posturing. I do understand it, but like, come on.
There's why. It's the same thing we had about Luck and Teddy in Denver. It's the same things I feel about Trask and Baker in Tampa. Why aren't you throwing in a quarterback that hasn't gotten any snaps yet at starting? To see what you got.
Right, that you claimed you wanted to see what you got and you're confident in. Why are you trying to make him compete with Jacoby Brissett where you know what you got?
It's okay. Washington, say being bad. That's fine.
Right. Somehow Breshad Perriman and others continue to find where, and Laquan Treadwell continue to find 1 year deals.
Being a first round pick's a hell of a drug, man.
Yeah.
What's his face from Superbad? People don't forget. They just love that first round pick. They love seeing that you were a first round pick, no matter how bad you've been.
Yeah. And I'm assuming there's other things that they do well that just.
Well, I'm sure. Too. Yeah. They block because they can't do anything else.
They block. Maybe they're good mentors.
They're great.
This point, they've been around for a while. Those
fantastic
two, man,
locker
they just,
room pieces.
They're tied together at the hip. There's players that keep associated to me, and those two are two of them because they're both high picks. They're both complete busts. They both somehow still have jobs after like what feels like 15 years. I know it's been more than five. I really don't recall anything else in the news cycle from this week that was that good. There's the whole gambling thing, which
there's been really nothing put down. There was what was the team? They had a player. It was a Colts, right?
Yeah,
it was a wide receiver. I think
no,
that said.
It's not. It's a cornerback.
Oh, it's a corner. Okay.
There was a lot of speculation that it was going to be a wide receiver that quote wasn't a star, but would be a household name, i.e. some suggestions leaning that it might have been Pittman. It's not. It's the cornerback. So that's what, in fact, not a household name. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. Not much to pull out there. Other than that, it's all hype news cycles, draft pick signing contracts, Who is and isn't at practice, coach speak, which is totally great. Anyway. All right, let's move on. We're going to go talk some Dynasty. So, stock up episode, my plan is we're just going to kind of throw out some names because I've been gone all week. Nothing got prepped for this. So, we're just going to talk some guys that are stock up, stock down based on what's happened in the draft, what's happened with offensive coordinator changes, and, you know, and really just in general overall what we're seeing. So, I probably should have had a better person to start with in the stock up, stock down. I want to go to Arizona first. Let's talk Hollywood Brown. So Ryan and I talked about this last week. I want to get your thoughts with Hopkins gone, right? Brown is in their wide receiver one slot right now.
Yeah.
In an offense that should pass. And the other thing I mentioned last week is not for long-term dynasty, but short-term roster depth to not forget Greg Dortch and what he did last year when he was pressed into duty, who's now sitting in a starter role as well. But thoughts on Hollywood. Where's his dynasty value at for you?
I mean, he's a firm wide receiver too. It's going to be tough because we're going to have to see how long Kyler is out for, and how long it'll take for him to kind of get back up to where he needs to be, which means it could be almost, you know, half a season at least of seeing Colt McCoy. I think it's Colt McCoy still the backup there. I can't remember now, which is not going to spell great, right? He's a wide receiver one on a team that may be one of the worst teams in football. Doesn't necessarily equal to high fantasy success, but we know that Brown with Jackson, with Murray when he was healthy, with and without Hopkins, can be a dominant receiver pretty consistently. He'll never be a fully high volume guy, but big play. And when you have a healthy Murray, you're going to have a whole new offense of coaching staff and scheme. I think a mid two feels right. I don't know if he'll ever reach wide receiver one range. I think at this point he probably won't because he'll never be a full on volume guy. And I think what you want in his preferred role is a high two. You want him as a complimentary guy that can work in all three levels and they can really play off of your number one, like you would have had with Hopkins, like what Baltimore wanted with him, maybe before they moved him with Bateman. So, it'll be interesting. He's pretty valued, I think, pretty safely. A couple days ago, trade was made. It was Claypool and the 201 and the 301 for Brown, which I think feels a little light for Brown. I'd be happy to get that for Brown, but that feels pretty much where you'll be. I think even lean towards a buy. There's going to be productive. He's probably better for basketball because have fun predicting what weeks the offense is going to show up. But he'll always have volume. He'll always be a flex play at worst.
Sure. All right. Next guy I think I want to jump to is let's talk Brandon Cooks for a bit. For a few minutes. Still not 30. Perennial.
still not 30.
Still not 30. 8 years in the league, perennial 1,000-yard receiver other than when he's missed time. He's been a 1,000-plus-yard receiver up in the 7-9 touchdown range. Solid wide receiver, too. Gets out of Houston, goes and lands himself in Dallas, playing second fiddle to CeeDee Lamb, but on an offense that obviously has some passing ability. Brandon Cooks, another guy for me anyway, that given the change of scenery and past productivity and the fact that, you know, the underlying stuff from last year doesn't really show a giant fall off. How are you feeling on Brandon Cooks kind of rebounding a little bit and having, you know, kind of a dynasty stock up for contending teams this year?
I think he's a great target for depth on on playoff pushing rosters. I think he's a great value now in rookie drafts. This is the best time to offload these picks during your drafts. People are in rookie fever, right? We spent an entire offseason shitting on this class, but it doesn't matter. Once the draft comes, people want their sleepers. People want those guys. No matter how bad the draft is being perceived, there's always players and spots that people want. And you can get a guy like Cooks, that you mentioned, has been a perennial 1,000-yard receiver. He's been over 1,000 air yards, like nine seasons, or not nine, he's played a full eight, but it's pretty much since since 2016, he's been well over 1,000 air yards. He's a deep threat, and now you get to put him on Dallas. He's paired up perfectly with CeeDee Lamb, who's going to take all the coverage away. A healthy Michael Gallup playing in a very much improved NFC East division and playing against teams like the Lions and Seattle. This is going to be, it's going to have some games to him. He may not be a volume playing like he's used to be. He's not going to get number one numbers. He's not going to get over 100 targets, but it's going to be like, he's going to be a perfect piece for that, because there's going to be weeks that he's going to go off. And I think he's again, no worse than a flex play as long as he stays healthy. You just got to watch to see what happens with him and Gallup and how those targets transition as the season goes on. But I think Cooks will always have value.
And they play different roles too. So,
How does that shape up as Gallup is finally a full year removed from his ACL injury?
Right. And trust wise, now if Dak throws 650 times, everything's going to be fine. And that's not outside of the realm of possibility. The way
I think at worst, he's a wide receiver 3-4. I think at worst, I think at best, he's up in the two range. He's up in the low two, mid to low two. And you're talking about another Brandon Cooks renaissance. He's the new Brandon Marshall, right? It's another 1,000-yard season for Brandon Cooks, and no one talks about it. It's what we're going to hear. No one's talking about Brandon Cooks. Like, no, we're all talking about it. We just want to keep quiet because value.
That's fair. Darren Waller. So down year last year, underlying metrics, again, were good. Target quality numbers were all good. But when you look at productivity and efficiency, he was 11th in unrealized air yards. He was 10th in fantasy points per game still. He was 2nd in yards per reception, 5th in yards per target, 11th in yards per route run. Some underlying good things with Waller. He goes to a Giants team that has wide open target volume, quarterback situation, and maybe not necessarily better than Carr, but the offensive situation in general, I think, is better than what he dealt with. And coming off of a super down year last year, I've seen some hype out of the beats writers saying they'd be surprised if he's healthy, if he doesn't lead the team in targets. The wide receivers again are kind of a cluster of deep ball guys. Darren Waller is a guy that I think can a non wide receiver that I think can very, very much rebound and pay huge dividends. Kind of a high risk, high reward thing with him being the wrong set of 30 and dealing with injuries, kind of like Jordan Reed was later in his career. But it's a high risk, high reward thing for me, where that stock, again, for competing teams should be up.
I think we're beyond his blow up years in 2020, 2019, right? The 100 plus targets, nearly 100 receptions in both, over 1,000 yards. The touchdowns is what's killed him, right? 3-2, and then he had 9 in 2020 when he was, I think, a tight end 1 or 2. I think it was 2 behind Kelsey or Andrews. And as you mentioned, it's a wide open receiving room with a bunch of slot receivers, a exciting prospect in Hyatt, but we're going to have to, he's going to have some time to take to, develop a full fledged route tree. Waller is in a really good spot to take advantage of this opportunity. It's just whether or not he can stay healthy and whether or not the offense takes a step forward again.
Not like Evan Ingram getting to Jacksonville.
Yeah, because, it's also volume, right? You're going to hopefully have a healthier Barkley, very improved defense. This is a team that wants to run the football. This team, this offense is still being built through Barkley. But you trade a third round, I think it was a third round pick for him. That is significant capital to move for a player that's in his 30s. Mm-hmm. Like, he has value to this team. This isn't someone that they just gave a bunch of money to. They spent significant capital on to get to bring to the team. I slot him in, like, probably better value than Hawk. You know, he doesn't have the upside. I don't know how I feel fully about this Giants offense just yet. So I think touchdown upside is almost the same as what it was with the Raiders. So this heavy variant, except this time he doesn't have a Cooper or an Adams to compete with. So we'll see. I think from a peer on peer tight end standpoint, until we get to see more what his redraft value is, we'll know for this year. Dynasty, it's second round pick, right? Like, he's probably in that mid to bottom because of him aging out and some of these other guys coming up, and especially after this class with all the high up from this class that we got, all the big names.
Yeah, and pick a running back and a quarterback. We're going to be review, and then we'll have you kind of look and see if there's any names you want to throw out. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right. The running back I'm looking at is going to be Isaiah Pacheco. So this is a weird one for me. But looking back from week 11 on last year, 100, this is total yards, and we're just going to read them off in order. 107-0. And I'm also going to put touchdowns on the end, too. 107-0, 86-1, 82-1, 93-0, 97-0, 90-0, 49-1, 64-1, 101-0, 85-0, 76-0. He had multiple games of three or more receptions. Fantasy points wise, he was only in single digits one of those games. The Chiefs have done nothing with their backfield after looking all season for somebody to take over. So, with, you know, Clyde buried down the depth chart, McKinnon is aging, but still decent. You know, I think, and really with Travis Kelce being the only remaining weapon that's established kind of left, I mean, we've debated the wide receivers to death. And Pacheco being a viable receiver, I think that his situation, while it hasn't improved necessarily, it's one of those things where you survived the draft, you didn't get hurt by anybody coming in the draft, anybody coming in so far in free agency, and you were on a burner at the end of last year, so really taking stock up from the end of last season. I think absolutely 100%, this is a guy whose dynasty stock is up. He was kind of a darling last year going into the season because he landed on the Chiefs. Unlike a lot of those, he's actually paying some dividends on that.
So this is a really interesting spot. I was thinking about Pacheco, I think, all early offseason. His profile is someone that I immediately want to move on, right? Day three mm-hmm. running back pick that had success at the end of last season on a high scoring popular team. It's a fitting story. We see it every year.
Sure.
And he's going to get replaced.
Stock up can absolutely mean sell him high.
Yeah. It didn't happen, but it
doesn't have to, but it can.
His replacement never came.
Yeah.
The thing is, Clyde's got one more year left. They have his contract. They didn't pick up his fifth year last year, fully healthy. I'm not saying Clyde is going to compete, but the stench of Clyde is still there. They don't need to add anybody. This back room, this backfield, they feel confident in. Thing is, Pacheco is their first or second down back, right? He had one game, six targets against the Bengals in the playoffs. Other than that, only one game with three or more targets, multiple games with zero targets. And this is when he was the starter. He's not the pass catcher in this offense. I think we all want another Kareem Hunt. The Chiefs have found success with a grinder back and a receiving back, and they've been very successful. McKinnon could easily come back onto this team, or they can try to find another day three guy or some.
I think McKinnon's still there.
Or he's still there, and he's still going to have that role. Pacheco's ceiling is capped because of that. He's just he always has volume upside because he's the starter. Chiefs get up big, want to protect Mahomes, grind down with Pacheco. Like that's where his role is. He's never really game script out because the Chiefs are never really they're not a heavy running team to begin with. So but his value never really changed, right? He was always like, I think people saw this and they were like,
my opinion on his value changed.
My opinion. Yeah. I've always kind of been, he's the one day three back that I'm okay with holding on to right now. Cause I don't think we've reached his peak yet. He hasn't reached James Robinson levels yet. He hasn't reached Philip Lindsay's. You're not trading. Like you can't get a first for him right now. Like you could have gotten for Robinson and Lindsay during their heyday, or even Damian Pierce last year during
another, his high mark. And that's another guy that straight survived.
Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, they brought in Singletary, but
they bought in a very similar back.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, on a very horrible offense. So, but anyways, it's, I think you can wait. I think we haven't seen what his balloon ceiling could be, but I also understand if you want to move off him. It's just that if you're going to sell him for a rookie, you know, pick this year, what are you really buying that's going to be any different than him? He's a mid-second round pick. What are you getting in return that's not him?
You're not.
You're not. So it's what's like he's on the league's best offense, and he has a starting role that's going to see snaps. He's not going to lose snaps. They didn't bring anybody in. And maybe they bring in a veteran, like if Delvin lands here. But the best part about this is they have no fucking salary. So there's no threat of them bringing in a veteran unless they take vet men or they find ways to carve up salary. But we'll know with cuts and shit if that happens. So, or trades too. I think he's even. I think his value is slightly increased post draft, but I think people were always pretty tepid with him. And I wasn't on board with the Chiefs taking a running back early in the drafts anyways. So nothing really changed for me.
Yeah. All right. My opinion of his value did. And I think the survival, you know, if you were worried about him getting replaced, is probably upped it since the draft, as you alluded to. So,
yeah.
All right. One more stock up guy. I think about this one for a second because quarterbacks are pretty well established.
Honestly,
I don't know that
I can think of one quarterback whose stock has kind of gone up, but barely. And that was just because he got his contract this year and Lamar. I think that's Lamar. Literally it.
I was going to bring up Lamar anyway, so let's just go ahead and do the beer review. Then we'll kick off with your Lamar, your section of throw me players with Lamar.
Okay.
Beer review.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. Again, I'm drinking Brewskis. This is a gold medal winning traditional lager from Noon Whistle. They won this a few weeks back, month back at the World Beer Cup in Nashville. First kind of note to it, it's a lot sweeter and not like an off or old. It's just it's got to be from the malt that they use. It's almost like a cream ale type of malt where it's a little vanilla to it. You get the traditional kind of skunkiness, you know, that you would get from a lager, especially one, you know, more of an old school one, slight hot bitterness, but barely there. Not to the point where it would be a traditional Pilsner, but I don't judge beers. I'm not going to sit there and say that, I totally see why this won it, especially with lagers where there's a lot more particularness to it because it's such a well-described style of beer. It's good. I tend to like my lagers or pilsners a little more brighter, a little more hoppy to it. I like more of the new age ones where they're more dry hopped, than a traditional boil, but it's solid. And for a light beer and for one that was told to me by smart people that is really fucking good, I I will lean to them.
I'll have to try it. So this is... We're going to see how close I was to last week's review on this, I guess. The Southern Crisp Beer. No, it's got kind of a good, like, cracker note to it. The malt in it's really subtle. Hop character definitely comes out. Nelson Sauvin gives a white wine, kind of grapey note to things. It definitely has that with some of the same drying qualities on the end of it. So it plays balanced. It drinks really, really light. Nelson Sauvin, not typically the featured hop you see in most traditional style pilsners. You don't normally see more of a noble hop variety there, like Saaz, EKG, Northern Brewer, those types of things. But overall, I think it gives it interesting, a little bit of an interesting twist, which is kind of what Southern Grist is known for. Because I think I did this one last week, I'm also going to talk about Austin Beer Works Pearl Snap. I was drinking on that all week. It had kind of like a nice bready, toasty, like malt character to it with kind of a more subtle hop balance. Really light and bodied, really refreshing and easy to drink and just kind of sip on. Maybe a little more toasty than I'd, you know, expect, anticipate, or want, but overall really, really solid, and it's on tap freaking everywhere down there. So was happy for the availability on that beer because I thought it was pretty good.
I'll have to try more. I do want to try more Southern Grist, and when I ever get down to the Lone Star State, I like to spend some time at breweries there. I love to see the growth of the very little we saw when we were down in Fort Worth.
I didn't need to go to anybody. I got to socialize a few. A dude I met from a utility out on the East Coast had a bunch of like real ales, IPAs and stuff that he was, that we shared and some other things. So Austin's got a good beer scene. I haven't gotten to really explore the beer scene there. Other than what's on tap at bars, but in any event, let's talk Lamar. So slight stock up. I think it's more than just because he got the contract. I also think it's because they brought in a offensive coordinator that's more pass game focus in Munkin to kind of develop, or that I think could develop and help take that passing game to the next level. And we've been talking about, we talk about it every year with Lamar, right? He's so good on the ground with his legs and making throws when he needs to. It's like if he could make throws when he doesn't need to, bro, if you understand what I'm saying by that.
Yeah, yeah.
Nope. More volume there.
I get you.
I think that's the only way you really take his game to the next level because of how good he is anyway. Attempts at that haven't really come to fruition for, you can say wide receivers, you can say Bateman, not being healthy, whatever. It just the fact is that it just hasn't come to fruition. That's not to say he's bad. It's just that's the one thing that people wanted to see out of Lamar. It hasn't happened. Now you bring in Munkin. Not only that, you also bring in Odell, potentially with a healthy Bateman. And you're suddenly looking at, an offense that has a bit more potential there that I think also drives the stock up, and with the drafting of Zay Flowers. So I think that the investment by the Ravens into the passing game, along with Lamar's already exceptional ability as a playmaker, also helps the stock, not just the certainty of the contract.
Yeah, it's... I mean, you hit all the points. It's really difficult to kind of find our quarterbacks that have clearly seen their stock riz, or especially post draft. I think so much gets talked about that nothing ever shocks me. But Lamar's case, it's kind of the put up or shut up, type of thing. Like, we've kind of reached that for a guy that's been the youngest MVP winner, the second quarterback to win it, unanimously. It's what he did in 2019 was incredible, and unfortunately we've battled injuries since.
Yeah.
Whether it be to him the last 2 years or in 2020 when they set a record for how many injured players on that team. Both of them are just hasn't been healthy. Now, granted, their staff has been massively shit on, and their equipment and all that shit, whatever. It's obviously they need to make some upgrades, but Monken has been a good chameleon of making sure he gets the right players involved. The massive volume in the passing offense with Tampa Bay in 2017 and 18 moves over to Cleveland with the failed 2019 again with Odell, but they were a top 12 rushing offense. So he'll find ways to get all the right players in place. It's just Lamar and volume is just not something that we're used to seeing. And it's just, are we going to see that? And I think it's hard. It's easy to paint a picture where that does, just given not just him and the offense, but given the teams that they have to play and have to go through. And with their defense not that great, it's a lot better than other teams, but they still got holes. It's,
yeah,
there's a reason why his stock feels up and should be up, and why you should be buying high on him.
Yeah, and kind of really why it's one of the only quarterbacks who's stock up there. I mean, you go through the rest of these guys, Tua's stocks can be tied to his ability to not get hurt,
not get concussed.
Yeah, please, I mean, I guess
never get concussed again.
Yeah, Rodgers is 30 bajillion years old switching teams, and I guess you could make an argument that maybe his stock will rebound a bit because of Garrett
maybe
Wilson.
Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones is an interesting one too, because I don't know that. I mean, he got the contract, so if you tie it to the contract, yes, but I don't know that they improved the infrastructure around him year over year in quite the same way. They added Hyatt, which is good, but
I mean, Waller, I think Waller
helps.
I think it's a better receiving core than what he had last year.
Sure.
Entering the season and have an investment into that. Yeah. But I agree, right? Them not targeting a high-end receiver to pair up with them. And the contract, well, it's a four-year deal. Like, there's going to be protection and outs if he sucks, which I don't think anyone would be surprised if it happened. I think we're witnessing, journeyman, Derek Carr levels of, of career without the big high in volume.
Yeah. Anything wide receiver wise, any one wide receiver wise?
I couldn't find a receiver. I do have another running back. I have one more player.
Okay.
And that's Rashad White.
Yeah.
I personally think he is one of the biggest winners of this entire free agency, from the reduction of Leonard Fournette into the team not adding in any running backs, whether it be through free agency or through the draft. Granted, Brady retires, and now Tampa Bay has one of the worst offenses in the league, but there's nothing there to stop him from being a volume play each and every week. Touchdown variance be damned. He's a target hog. He potentially could be out of the backfield, and there's no quarterback there that's going to be a tuck-ended run. I don't think we're going to witness Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask running the football a lot, which is a really good thing for him, and what his future could be for his production this year. I think he's RB29, I think, on DLF. And you're starting to see articles pop up. Now, I think he's going to be a very heavy popular on sleeper lists. So I think his redraft value would definitely increase. Starting to see it's people like us that loved him pre-draft that are very high, but people are also very turned off by this Bucks offense as a whole. So I'm interested, to hear your thoughts on him.
I think my thoughts are that you can be turned off by the Bucks offense as a whole, but the fact is that if you have a running back that's going to get volume, they're at least going to be top 24. And that's what Rashad White is, especially because he can catch passes. I'm not saying that Keyshawn Vaughn or Chase Edmonds or whatever might not force a hot hand approach every now and again, but this is a team that's going to be playing the check down game and the short yardage game. They do have three backs that can catch passes, but there is no stronghold in the backfield, and the talent of Rashad White is staring everyone in the face. So I think it's definitely a thing to be cautiously optimistic about, but I think you can certainly be optimistic about it.
I mean, he was top 12 in targets last year. I get it.
Yeah.
Brady, you know, a captain checked on, knows how to get these running backs in place. A lot can be said about the improvement of the offensive line by them just being healthy. Tampa Bay was ravaged with injuries on the O-line last year, which completely changed people's opinion on what the offense was going to look like. And
the interior O-line's ultimately going to matter more than the quarterback switch, I think.
Yes.
So
I would, and it's not like Brady was very good last year. He was pretty bad.
Right. Some other guys that come to mind, Swift to the Eagles. We talked about that a bit last week, but being in that rotation where backs just seem to succeed, I think could be good for his efficiency. Sanders to the Panthers lands in an area where, you know, he gets some solidified volume over Hubbard. Damian Pierce survived the draft. So in that regard, I think that you're doing better. You know, Najee Harris, still the guy in Pittsburgh. If he can bounce back a little bit with a maybe more competent offense, or Kenny Pickett in year two. So, you know, the other guy I think that we didn't talk about that probably gets a stock up bump for a wide receiver is Garrett Wilson, but his stock's already way up.
Yeah, it's
I think
that's,
that
yeah.
Once you, I think that pulling Rodgers in though is going to help his target quality, which is just going to shoot it somewhere above the moon instead of on the moon.
And then also Chris Olave, his running mate at Ohio State.
Yeah, Chris Olave is another one. I like that call with Derek Carr coming in and the improvement there.
Beam, I honestly think it's a little too high. I think writing off Michael Thomas completely from this team in a player that at times disappeared last year, even though he had very strong 4 or 5 game stretches. Top 12 receiver right now, wide receiver 11 per PLF, per DLF. So that's one name that's been standing out the most. Everyone else kind of feels properly weighted, and I don't think anyone's gotten any major bumps. Even like Kadarius Toney, right? You think it, with all the news coming out and popularity, he's still wide receiver 49.
Yeah.
I think people are finally like, I think the masses are finally starting to be.
There's going to be a lot more fun discussion around stock down, I think, as I look through some of this, as things have become more crowded.
Wide receivers, around, definitely. There's a lot more.
And around, well, even running backs too, with all the.
Oh my God.
On.
Absolutely.
Stock down is going to be interesting, as is, you know, sleeper type discussions and making cases for some of these guys to actually emerge.
I got a tight end. Greg Dulcich is a top 12 tight end right now.
Oh yeah, Greg Dulcich is a guy that started to take some productivity to the next level last year, and then fold. Then a lot of people thought it was going to be Albert O, and he came in as a kind of a late season, you know, really starting to catch on, and he's in the window where you want to see that happening. So I absolutely like the Dulcich call. You know, I think in my eyes, he was already up, but that's going to be a little known name for some people, or a forgotten name in the offense, because he's not one of those superstars, but he's definitely trending upward.
And then you get it can't be as bad as last year. Like, it literally can't get worse for Denver.
Can't get any worse.
I don't see it getting worse. Yeah. I know he's a rookie, but Dalton Kincaid already is a top 7 tight end. It speaks volumes to where we're at with the tight end landscape. But people just say they just don't care that tight ends take at least a couple years to get going. Like, we were fucking blessed with Kittle and his blow up in 18, and even Andrews' blow up in 19. Like, we were blessed with year 2 production, because what we're normal is the Hawks, the Fants, the Pitts, throw it back to Ingram, throw it back even further to Ebron. Like, we get burnt heavy early in expectations for first run. And it's just, I just oddly enough use all first run tight ends, but we get burnt on these guys time and time again. And a little shocking. but also yep. speaks to why more of the tight end landscape is in Dynasty.
Yeah,
that's all I could find that feels worthy of conversation.
All right, and that's the show. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Probably same time, probably same place. We'll talk about that off the air. I am your host at Beer Fueled Hop. Beer Fueled Thury is my co-host. At Ryan Miner _ FFB is still sucking at bowling. And we will catch you guys next week.
See ya.
Bye. Shit, where's my mouse? There it is.